on the line now. I have Siobhan Matches with Lawler Partners. Hello, Siobhan. How are you? Welcome back.
Good morning, all. How are you?
Okay, some nice questions for you this week for my listeners. The first one is, I'm trying to sort out my mother's estate and I'm in the middle of selling her properties. Now, the buyer is a company and we have signed contracts and a deposit. The purchaser now wants to pull out of the purchase. Now, can they do this? And she said she's really confused and I thought that a signed contract was binding.
Right, okay, you know, that is interesting. I suppose the short answer for your listener there is no, they can't pull out of the purchase. Once there is a, they're correct in saying that once a contract is signed and deposit is paid, that it is legally binding. It has to be signed by both parties, and 10% of the purchase price has to be paid as a balance deposit. And then the purchaser is legally committed to paying the vendor the purchase price as stated in the contract. Now, what your listener hasn't mentioned there, you know, and must maybe something that has to be teased out, it's not clear whether mm-hmm. there might have been a special condition maybe inserted in the contract, such as a loan approval clause or something like that, that would allow the purchaser to walk away, I suppose. So, for example, let's say if there was a loan approval clause, that's sometimes inserted in a contract to say if the, you know, if the lending institution won't approve funds, that the purchaser can rescind the contract and are entitled to their deposit back. So that might have to be teased out a bit more. But look, if there was no special condition like that in the contract which would allow for that, they can't walk away. They are legally bound. Now, unless they do come to some sort of agreement with your listener, you know, but mm-hmm. the purchaser would... they might lose their deposit. What the listener can do, I suppose, is they can, they may wish to force the purchaser into completing the contract. They can do that because, as I said, at this stage it is legally binding. So if they do wish to do that, they can instruct their solicitor to serve what's called a 28-day completion notice. Now, this is served on the purchaser's solicitor. They have 28 days to complete the sale. Now, what needs to be kept in mind for that is interest will be charged or can be charged as per the contract for each day the mm-hmm. sale does not close within that 28 days. So it can become quite pricey for a purchaser. No purchaser wants to find themselves in that position, you know.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. It's not an ideal situation. But look, that is an option that your listener may have, or you know, if they don't want to go down that road, the purchaser can forfeit their deposit and they can find another buyer.
Okay, it's complicated but simple. But I mean, I suppose with any contracts, the devil is in the details. So read everything
absolutely.
Properly.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and the second one is now, we've recently been contacted by a landlord to say that he's selling the house and needs us to vacate. He's only given us 1 month's notice. Now, is there any way we can object to this? And do we have any rights as a tenant?
Right, okay. So in these situations, there's three things that your listener will need to consider. Now, so the first thing, I suppose, that to look at is whether there is, first of all, appropriate grounds for the landlord to terminate. The second thing would be, has the landlord given them a valid notice? And the third thing would be, have they given them the appropriate notice period? Now, they don't say how long that they've been in the property, which will have an effect on the appropriate notice period. But going back to the first, I suppose, ground, whether they do have grounds to terminate the tenancy in the first place at all, would be if they are in the property for less than 6 months, the landlord can terminate on, they don't have to give grounds to terminate, they can terminate if they want for no reason.
Okay.
Now, if they're there for over 6 months, they do gain rights as a tenant. Now, they gain what's known as Part 4 rights. This has recently changed, actually, in the 4th of June, I think new legislation came in to change this. It's now 6 years. So they have, after 6 months, they have rights for up to 6 years in that property, okay?
Okay.
Now, if they have these Part 4 rights, the landlord can only terminate on certain grounds. Now, these would be, let's say, if the tenant has breached their responsibilities, if the property is no longer suitable for the tenant, if the landlord requires it for their own personal or family use, if the landlord is doing significant refurbishment of the property. Now, it has to be significant that they require the tenants to leave. If they're changing the use of the property, it's
Siobhan, what are you selling the house? So, I mean, you can't stop people from selling their own property, can you?
So one of the grounds is that if they want to sell the property, then the landlord must be intending to sell the property within 3 months of terminating the tenancy. And they must, when they give their notice, they must give a statutory declaration as well to say that they're intending to sell, you know, and that has to be given with the notice, okay? So I suppose that kind of leads us on to the second point of whether the notice is actually valid or not, okay? They're quite strict on how notice is served and how it is valid. It has to be in writing. An email does not suffice. Sometimes people say that they've received an email from their landlord. That's not going to stand. It has to be in writing. It has to be signed by the landlord. It has to specify a date of service, reason for termination, the date that they want them to leave, and if needs be, it has to include that statutory declaration, as I mentioned before, if the landlord wants to sell the property. All right, so that would be the second thing. So they need to determine then if what they have received is valid or not, okay? Mm-hmm. And then that leads us on to the appropriate time period. And again, that would depend on how long they're in the property. So let's say, for example, if they're in there, not less than 1 year, but less than three, the notice period is 120 days, for example.
Okay.
You know, and they would find that on the property, the Residential Tenancies Board website, to get the appropriate notice period. So if they look at them three issues, if they feel that, no, you know, the notice isn't valid, or my landlord hasn't given me the appropriate notice period, or they haven't given me the statutory declaration, you know, with the notice, it's not in writing, it's in an email, they're not happy with it, they can put in an application to the Residential Tenancies Board, you know, to review the notice, and what they usually go down the road of mediation or adjudication. Now, it's really straightforward. Their website is brilliant. It's really user friendly, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's €15 if you want to do an online application. It's €25 if you want to post in an application.
Okay.
And the Residential Tenancies Board, they're impartial. They don't provide advice to one specific party. They're impartial, and then they give a decision, and then that's binding. And, you know, if let's say the landlord doesn't follow through on the decision, then, you know, they might decide then to go down the legal route. But they don't necessarily need legal representation for the Residential Tenancies Board application. You know,
they look after all that, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah, they're really, really good, and they're set up to kind of avoid necessary legal representation and all that, you know.
Okay.
So yeah.
Anyway, I just found it interesting there when an email wouldn't be accepted. It has to be on paper. It's usually the other way around. Everything has to be online now and all that sort of thing.
And exactly, yeah. And that's actually usually what landlords kind of get caught out with most, to be honest. You know, they'll send an email and they'll think it's okay, but in fact it's not. They're going to contest it. An email isn't sufficient. And that actually means that then their notice isn't going to be valid and they will have to reserve it. And then again, the time for their notice period will start running from the new valid notice.
Okay. So maybe someone in the government sort of wants to keep the use of paper alive.
Exactly. Here's
okay. That's one thing I always do. I mean, I'm dealing with any of the people, you know, whether it's ESB or whoever it may be, I always insist on bills and receipts, paper.
Yeah.
I want paper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to keep it alive as well. Okay, a final one. A final one is, I recently got an extension to the back of my house and kitchen. I was happy with the work done, but with the heavy rain this week, the roof leaked. It damaged my kitchen and some appliances. Now, the builders have said that it isn't anything to do with them and that the job was completed to a high standard. She doesn't know what to do. And is there anything she could do? That seems strange, Ari, if they've just finished work.
That's actually really unfortunate. And she hasn't said when the work was carried out, but I presume, you know, she said it was recent. So I presume it was in this year or so. But anyway, I suppose from a legal point of view, the consumer is... If there's a contract in place, you know, that's probably the first thing we have to look at. Does she have a contract with the builder? But they are protected by the Sale of Goods and Supply of Services Act 1980. Now, some consumers might think, you know, that's only when you're buying goods in a shop and that, but it's not. It would cover buildings and home improvements and tradesman's products and that kind of thing, because it does incorporate the supply of services, all right? So I suppose if you're looking at the supply of services, you know, from a tradesman or a builder, you should expect them to have the necessary skills to provide service, to be provided with proper care, to provide service with proper care and diligence, and that the materials used will be sound and good, and the goods supplies will be of merchantable quality. Okay, so I would probably advise your listener there, first of all, to maybe go get a surveyor to carry out a survey on the property, because they need to find out the extent of the damage. There might be some hidden problems that may materialise later, you know, and maybe the surveyor could probably identify a direct link between the work carried out and the problems that they're having with the roof, you know. And maybe they'll get a clearer picture then, and they could maybe try to go back to the building company and say, look, you know, make official complaint, send it in writing. Again, send it in on paper, in writing, registered email, you have proof of delivery, send in any contracts, receipts, delivery notes, quotes, anything that will support their claim, and ask for them to rectify the situation.
I think Siobhan, to an extent, there, the big question, I suppose, how long it is since the job was done, because I don't know if there's any legislation for duration and guarantee of time. For instance, if you get something like an extension built, is it guaranteed for 2 years or 1 year or whatever way? I don't know how that works on that.
Well, if it turns out that, I suppose, the problem is to do with professional negligence or a breach of contract, you would have, the statute is 6 years from the date that the incident has occurred, but or for the damage has materialised. So, they would have 6 years, but I suppose that would probably be, they would need to get reports to back that up, that the cause of, that there is a direct link between the work carried out and the problems that have arisen, you know, and obviously the longer the time goes on, maybe more difficult.
I suppose the surveyor would be able
to show that link.
Yeah, the surveyor would be able to tell them that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I would advise, it's always good first for a report call to go back to the company and say, look, this is what I have, you know, ask for the situation to be corrected. And one thing that is really important, to inquire with them whether they have professional indemnity insurance, because at the end of the day, if you go down the route of legal proceedings and you go to sue them and you get an award against them, then, if they don't have insurance, you know, it'd be like suing a man of straw. You know, they mightn't actually be able to pay you. So it's really important to inquire whether they have professional indemnity insurance, because then you'd be covered under their insurance policies. And look, if all that fails and you don't get a satisfactory resolution, you can report the bill. They have a regulatory body. I think it's called the Construction Industry Register of Ireland. So you write them a formal letter and a complaint, and they might be able to enter into mediation or that to try resolve it. And look, if all else fails, there is the legal route. If it's less than €2,000, you can bring claim to the small claims court. If it's more than that, we would be advising to seek legal advice. But if you can show, look, I try to engage with this company, I've done everything I can to try rectify the situation. I have this report here. It says that it's because of their workmanship from the start that has caused this problem. It's cost me X, Y, and Z to fix it. You know, it cost me a lot of stress, there would be a claim there. But again, just to also make sure, you know, again, if you're going to go down the route of legal proceedings, the six years is from the date of the cause of action.
Okay, well, that's something.
So, not the date when you figure out it has happened. So that's actually been litigated in the court. So it's the date of the cause of action. So you've 6 years from that. But just be mindful that, you know, make sure that they have insurance in place that they can actually pay out in the end, because there's nothing worse than going through the whole procedure. It's quite stressful. And then you get an award and you still don't get your money.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you could be waiting years and years or whatever. Well,
exactly,
a good thing for me there, and I suppose for a lot of our listeners as well, unless I'm sort of the only one, but I did know that legislation was there, the six-year period where you can make the claim, which is terrific. Anyway, Siobhan, thank you very much for answering the queries. Well, we're off air now for the month of August, so I'll talk to you sometime in September. So have a good rest of the summer. And have you had your holidays yet?
No, not till August now. Okay. I'm taking a week myself in the middle of August. So,
are you going anywhere exotic, if you don't mind me asking?
No, I wish I was. No, I'm not.
If the weather stays...
I'm camping, if that's as exotic as it gets. I'm going camping down the country.
It can be, but there you go. I mean, if the weather stays good here, you can't beat Ireland anyway when the weather's
good. Absolutely, it's beautiful, yeah.
Thanks, Siobhan. That was great. Thanks very much, Siobhan.
Take care.
Give us the website there before I let you go.
The website, so we are at www.lawlerpartners.ie.
Okay, thank you very much, Siobhan.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. And they're situated there just beside the four courts.